and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Brandis Freeman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at.
Name one thing that they propose that speaks to building safe and affordable communities.
A new city budget will take effect after Mayor Johnson refuses to veto or sign it, calling it morally bankrupt. And a Chicagoan transforming vacant lots into flower farms that hires at-risk young people becomes CNN's Hero of the Year. After the break, Mayor Brandon Johnson joins us to talk about his decision on the city budget and more. He joins Nick Bloomberg in studio right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
No veto. That's the decision from Mayor Brandon Johnson about the rival budget passed over his objections by city council. But the mayor also did not sign the budget, so it will automatically go into effect January 1st, averting a Chicago government shutdown. What went into the mayor's decision? Well, he's here to tackle that question and look back at an eventful 2025 in Chicago. Mayor Brandon Johnson joins us now. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. So you announced today, as we said, you would neither veto nor sign the budget plan, allowing it to automatically become law. How did you reach that decision?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. There are critical investments in this budget that were important to me and to the people of this city. One, making sure that we're investing in our young people, which we've done that, we've maintained it. Investing in mental and behavioral health care services, that's in this budget. We were able to maintain that. Also ensuring that we're creating economic opportunities for small businesses and building more affordable homes, we've maintained that. We also had some pretty straightforward red lines in the budget as well. No increase in property taxes, no collection of grocery taxes, and of course, no to raising garbage fees. So we were able to maintain that. However, though there are some important investments in this budget, there's one aspect of it that I believe is quite frankly, is immoral, is that there are a group of alders that were dead set on attempting to balance this budget off the backs of working people and poor people by selling off debt. And what we've seen is historically that that has been an incredibly harassing and undignified way of collecting debt to people who, quite frankly, are in economic peril at the results of what's coming from the federal government.
Well, and to that end, you also signed two executive orders aimed at knocking down a couple of the elements you found objectionable, preventing the sale specifically of medical debt to collectors, as well as an effort to rein in Chicago Police Department overtime spending. Are you confident those executive orders have the full force of law behind them?
Well, that's what they're designed to do, is really to protect all of Chicago. And so where we've seen historically where police overtime has, you know, placed our budget in peril, while also we've seen how medical debt in particularly have led to many working people landing in poverty, right? And so that was important. Now, there are some key elements of this budget that I do know will help strengthen our city over time, where we've put forth cost savings. But really, this moment is about challenging big corporations and the ultra-rich to pay their fair share in taxes. The best way to balance a budget is to ensure that there's some shared sacrifice. And what was presented before me and why I didn't sign it was because we had an opportunity to challenge the wealthiest, most lucrative corporations in the city of Chicago to put more skin in the game, or we could go in the direction in which at least 30 alders decided to go in, which was essentially the balances budget off the backs of poor people.
So this plan doubles the CPD overtime budget from $100 million to $200 million. Why do you feel it's necessary as well to put more guardrails in place on police OT as you've done with this executive order?
Well, the first thing that we had to do was make sure that we have a realistic overtime budget, right? But we also had to put safeguards in place because, you know, look, our police officers are working hard every single day. And just for their own mental health and their stability. We had to put some measures in place so that their well-being is also being considered. So it was twofold, getting the police department on par with other city departments as it relates to overtime, while also ensuring that the health and the well-being of our police officers is also being considered and we're putting that front and center in all of our decisions.
This budget also legalizes slot machines and video poker in every Chicago bar and restaurant with a liquor license. Now, some critics say that could harm low-income and working-class voters. That's been a concern of yours. Was that a provision that you tried to negotiate out of the budget?
We certainly attempted to negotiate a balanced budget. There are still some severe concerns about the way the revenues that have been proposed are not quite lining up with our expenses, right? So there's still some efforts on the part of my administration while also working with City Council to ensure that moving forward that this budget is stabilized. Now, there are obviously some concerns about how they attempted to balance this budget that I'm concerned about long term, where potential loss to services as well as layoffs could be in the future of our city. The most important thing is that we remain vigilant, as an administration, to essentially speak to what working people have called for, which is the ultra-rich and these big corporations to put more skin in the game. Obviously, that work is not done, and we're going to continue to do our part to ensure that budgets, not just for now, but in the future, reflect what the people of Chicago desire and need.
Well, let's talk about some of those concerns that you've raised, because you and some of your top fiscal officials say this budget will result in a deficit of more than $163 million. How soon do you expect to know, whether that forecast is accurate and when that deficit will arise?
Well, that work is being done now. My team has not stopped working to make sure that all of the amendments that have been put forward, that they're actually in the right line items. But even as they do that work, it's becoming clear that the budget is not balanced. And so that's why we put some protective measures in place moving forward. But make no mistake about it, I am incredibly concerned about the approach that a number of alders have taken that have placed a great deal of consternation and instability in this moment. However, our work is never done, and we're going to continue to ensure that we do everything in our power to protect the working people of this city.
Well, and some of those alders we saw just last week pretty openly disagreeing with the city's budget director and CFO, kind of in favor of their own calculations. How tough is it to negotiate when the two sides aren't even agreeing on kind of the basic facts at issue?
Well, what makes it difficult is that you had a group of aldermen who were not listening to what working people wanted. In fact, 80% of the people of Chicago resoundingly said that we need to challenge corporations to put more skin in the game. Now, there is a social media tax that's going to help us generate revenue for mental and behavioral health care services. Obviously, the PPLT, which is a tax on corporations, we did raise that. That was the right thing to do. They essentially took 98.4% of my overall budget. The key element where there was disagreement was essentially over less than 2% of the overall budget. The problem is the impact that that's going to have on working people. There is real serious concern there. What made it increasingly difficult was that we had the interests of corporations, millionaires and billionaires, who put incredible pressure on alders, and some alders decided to stand with corporations and the interests of the ultra-rich instead of standing with working people. Now, the fight continues because we know there's much more work to be done, and that includes working in Springfield to work with the General Assembly to challenge the ultra-rich to put more skin in the game, whether that's through a digital ad tax, I've openly supported that, or whether that's through a millionaire's tax. The work that we have to do as a city, as a state, to protect working people, that work certainly continues.
Yeah, are there specific asks that you'll be going to Springfield with in the coming session? Because, in the previous session, there seemed to be perhaps a bit of a contentious relationship there.
Well, look, I mean, I think whenever you're leading in a transformational way, folks will, feel that pressure. That doesn't intimidate me. The people of Chicago elected me to stand up for everyday people, and that's essentially what I'm doing.
So we've been through two fairly contentious budget cycles the last couple of years. There's also the possibility as well of further budgeteering necessary if the deficit that you predict emerges. After that, how would you evaluate your relationship with City Council right now?
Well, look, my door has always remained open to every single member of City Council. My door will always remain open, in fact. And so what we have to center our work around, we have to center that work around people. That's the most important thing. I was elected to stand up for working people. We're on pace as we continue to work to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. We've seen historic declines in violence, including homicides. We haven't seen these levels of decline since the 1960s, right? And so what I was charged to do was to make sure we put forth the budget that was balanced, that ultimately protect working people. As long as we're centering our work around working people of this city, we can never go wrong.
I mean, I know we're just through the end of this process, but as you reflect on what we've been through in recent weeks, is there anything that you have done differently, anything you're thinking about for the next time around?
Well, we're certainly going to continue to organize and galvanize people around the city. We hosted multiple town halls, visited many of our leaders within the faith community, also the business community. We're going to continue that work. Look, what the other group of alders decided to do was to take 98.4% of the budget that I put forth. They kept that intact. Now, they didn't want to. They tried to take away youth summer jobs. They tried to double the garbage fees. We pushed back on that. The small element that's still left that's going to have profound impact on working people was the fact that alders decided to sell off debt of working people. We have seen before, whenever there's been an attempt to sell something off in this city, that has never bode well for us. And so, again, I'm deeply concerned that what was presented and passed could leave us right back at the table again halfway through the year if these numbers continue to do what we speculate that they'll do, which could lead to cuts to services and laying people off. But again, I'm going to continue to work hard to make sure that we're protecting all of Chicago.
Well, certainly the budget has been taking up a significant portion of your plate. It's not the only thing on your plate, though.
Right.
So after demanding the CTA come up with this big comprehensive safety plan, the Federal Transit Administration is now threatening to withhold millions of dollars from CTA, calling their framework materially deficient. What's your response to that?
Well, look, as I've said from the beginning, community safety is my top priority, and it will always be my top priority. And, of course, that includes safety on our public transportation system. With the investments that are coming from Springfield, it places us in a much stronger position to ensure that the full force of government can show up for our riders. Ridership is up. That's a good thing. More and more people are using our public transportation system. However, we have to utilize every single aspect to keep people safe, whether that's law enforcement, security, but it's also preventative services, social workers and counselors, people who can handle individuals who are suffering from mental illness. So that full force of government approach is still our priority, and now we have funding from Springfield that will enable us to be able to carry out that vision in totality.
Yeah. Well, you know, this all comes in the wake of the brutal random attack on the Blue Line where 26-year-old Bethany McGee was set on fire. The man accused with the crime does have, you know, a lengthy record, was out on electronic monitoring. We've heard from the Cook County State's Attorney and Chief Judge that they think electronic monitoring should perhaps be reexamined in the wake of that attack. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think in this particular instance, it's very clear that there is a breakdown in all of our institutions, right? And so I think it's important, it's imperative that we always review our practices, especially as, you know, these laws begin to set in. If there are areas of vulnerability, we should do everything that's necessary to strengthen where there are some gaps. But again, it's going to require full force of government approach. It's law enforcement, but it's also the critical investments to make sure that the people who need the most help and support, that help and support is there.
Yeah. So, you know, despite the claims that we hear from folks, including the president and his administration, crime in Chicago is down sharply. You know, the city's on track for the fewest homicides in decades. Why do you think it's sometimes hard to communicate the message to folks, the reality of the violent crime numbers versus the perception that some folks have of high crime?
Yeah, look, in the 1970s, you know, there, 1973, 1974, there were 970 homicides. 1995, I believe there were 778. In 2016, there were about 805 or 828. And then 2021, there were 805. And so we've cut that in half. There's more work to be done. But, you know, the point, though, is that law enforcement by itself cannot solve all of our societal issues. And so what I've done is I put forth a comprehensive, holistic approach to ensure that we're driving violence down. It's going to take people a little bit more time to get that full field effect from our investments. But the good news is that so far there are 175 or so less individuals who have lost their lives to gun violence. We've worked hard to get illegal weapons off the streets of Chicago as they get trafficked in from states that voted for Donald Trump. It's going to take all of us to continue to drive violence down in the city of Chicago. And though we are heading the right direction, we're not patting ourselves on the back. This is why this budget and these investments were so critical as we work to build safe and affordable communities across our beloved city.
Yeah, and do you think that's a message that's perhaps starting to resonate with aldermen who in the past may have had a more law enforcement, judicial system-focused approach, that things like youth jobs, for example, can be an anti-violence measure? Is that message breaking through to alders?
I believe it is, including our CVI workers, our community violence intervention workers. You know, law enforcement working with individuals who are justice involved, they've turned their lives around, and now they're contributing to the transformation of our communities. That also includes building more affordable homes, investing in our public education system. In my budget, I released the largest TIF surplus in the history of Chicago. We're going to send $500 million over to our public schools, but we're also investing in our parks and our libraries. All of this is critical to build safe and affordable communities, and now there's far more buy-in around investing in the full force of government, not just law enforcement, but law enforcement and affordable housing, law enforcement and public education, law enforcement and youth employment, and that's why we're seeing the results that we're seeing so far.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, I want to mention a story that broke late today, that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled President Trump did not have the authority to deploy federalized National Guard troops in Chicago over the objections of Governor Pritzker. Does this show to you that Chicago and Illinois can fight the president, can fight the administration, and have some success there?
Well, absolutely. Every single lawsuit that we put up against the Trump administration, we prevailed, and everything that they've brought against us, we were also to beat back. I said from the very beginning I was going to use every single tool available to me to protect all of Chicago, whether that's executive orders, which we've done, legislation, which we've done, including taking it to the court. And so we've said from the very beginning that this president was working outside the bounds of his executive authority. He has trampled on this Constitution, working with our law department, including the state of Illinois. It's proof positive that when we stand firm on our values, the people who are united around those values will always prevail.
All right. Always much more to discuss, but that's where we'll have to leave it for today. Mayor Brandon Johnson, thanks for joining us, and have a Merry Christmas.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas to you as well.
And up next, hope and healing through flowers. Joanna is back to talk with the local couple getting national attention.
Started on vacant lots on Chicago's South Side is now gaining national attention. A local couple is turning empty land into flower farms with the mission to give at-risk youth a path forward. They have been named CNN's Hero of the Year, an honor celebrating community changemakers from around the world. The award comes with a $100,000 prize and a growing spotlight. They say their work is ready to bloom nationwide. And joining us to talk about it all is Keelan and Hannah Blackwell, founders of Southside Blooms. Well, thank you both for joining us. Exciting. I'm sure you guys are excited, happy, all the emotions. Keelan, I want to start with you because what I find so interesting and fascinating is that you've spoken that, A, you never thought you were going to be a farmer, and B, nonetheless, a florist. So tell me a little bit about what this achievement means for you and for the organization.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely an amazing honor for not only our organization, but, you know, really for the city of Chicago. And it really affirms, you know, really the entrepreneurial community that we have here that's working to bring healing to our city. You know, like for our organization, we really hope that this will open up doors nationwide so that we can build out a national customer base, so we can create more jobs for young people here in Chicago and across the country. And, you know, definitely can't leave out Hannah. You know, we did this together. So even though the, you know, the award has my name on it, it really was me and Hannah as the co-founders, as well as all the youth who are the real stars of our organization, because they're doing all the work. So it really just affirms the creativity and the abilities of our young people in our communities on the south and west sides of Chicago. And it's really cool that their talent is shining on a world platform.
I love that, you know, you bring up that word, that teamwork. And Hannah, same question for you. What was that feeling like, A, to watch your husband on stage, but also, you know, be awarded this award?
Well, it was incredible. I mean, you know, he, if you kind of see on the video, he kind of looks out to the crowd who's looking at me, because we both were just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this just happened. There's so much anticipation leading up to it, and you don't want to, you know, get your hopes up. But to see, you know, that happen, I mean, it was something that I won't forget. And it affirmed, I feel like, all the work that has gone into this. You know, as a wife, I was incredibly proud to see Keelan getting that, because I know we've done it together, but he's really, you know, pushed it forward. And, you know, we're always looking to him, me included, to sort of continue to lead the way. And so it's just was incredible. I think it also felt very timely, because we've been really feeling like this needs to go to every inner city in the United States. And to do that, we really need a bigger platform. And there's kind of like no bigger platform than CNN, you know, as far as getting that message out to the nation, that we really desire to see all inner cities change, all youth get a chance, and to have their creativity really shine. So it felt like just perfect timing and just really incredible.
I'm sure, and just all the work that you guys put into it. Keelan, can you tell me a little bit briefly what Southside Blooms is all about?
Yeah, so we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're based here in Inglewood, and really our big vision is to establish flowers as an anchor industry in the hood. You know, so what that means is trying to divert, you know, currently about 8% of the flowers that you see in the United States are coming in from overseas. So we want to really have all that wealth that's currently going to other countries to remain right here in our city and right here in the United States, so that we can put our young people to work, so that we can rebuild our communities from the bottom up. So at the end of the day, like, that's really what we're doing here. You know, we build solar-powered flower farms, and then we put our youth to work as both florists and flower farmers.
Keely, have you seen some youth heal through, you know, putting these flowers together? Would you say that flowers are healing?
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, so flowers is kind of a, you know, sort of unorthodox approach to community development. So, you know, at first, like, a lot of people didn't really see the potential of it, you know, particularly like a lot of our young men, you know, they thought it was like very girly and that kind of thing. But yes, like, I mean, at this point, we've worked with hundreds of youth over the last 10 years, you know, through our workforce development program. And, you know, we have youth who've been with us for over 3 years. So, you know, the fact that they're sticking with this and they're staying off the street, it really shows the viability of flowers as a real career and industry choice for the south and west sides of Chicago. And, you know, we're really, really excited that, you know, our young people are having a very real bottom-up organic way to support themselves so that they can pursue their dreams.
Yeah, I can imagine. And Hannah, what would you say that winning this award means to the youth who work there?
just more opportunity, you know, more eyeballs means more people buying our flowers. So, you know, the amount of flowers that we sell and arrangements and events that we book, it directly relates to how many youth we can hire. We have youth, you know, parents texting saying like, hey, you know, so-and-so has a cousin, could he work for you guys? We have like over 100 kids on our wait list. So all of it just goes, you know, directly to creating more jobs. And that means people, you know, giving that, telling about the opportunity to their friends, telling their relatives that this is a viable job right here in the community. So when we started, we knew that one, we had to live in the community for there to be community buy-in for them to accept us. But two, the jobs we created had to be right here in the community. And we have seen over and over again that that's been super vital. So even though we sell nationwide, we do events all over Chicago and high-end venues and everything, everything starts here in the community so that it's very familiar, it's very easy to get to. And then from there, you know, we can pull resources from the rest of the city, which has proved to be a really important model.
Well, that's amazing. I think it's wonderful how you guys hype each other up. I can definitely feel the love and everything that you've created. So I'm excited to see what you guys do with the cash prize. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, PJ. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. On a programming note, be sure to join us tomorrow night as we revisit some of our favorite conversations from the past year. And on Thursday, we're off for the holiday, but we'll see you back here on Friday when we look back at the biggest stories of 2025. And now from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and happy holidays. Good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.